Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Okay, there it is. It's Thursday morning. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, creepy hippies listening on ham radios. How are you? Tune it around the dial. You can get everywhere in the world on those ham radio things. Riley, you can listen to Pakistan, Russia. You can listen to China. You ever seen a ham radio, the shortwave radio? What am I talking
about?
That's
a cult, man.
It is?
It is a cult.
Are they still around, though, in the great...
Of course they're still around, and there are still groups of people that huddle around them in the middle of the night listening to broadcasts from all... It's a cult, I'm telling you.
So it's still around, even in the age of high technology, even in the age where you don't need to have those devices, they're still around, those ham radios.
It's beyond high technology.
Do you remember ever having one of them radios? I remember when I was a kid, I had one of those radios that used to get that had the all the different bands, like the shortwave one,
the
shortwave two. Yeah. Well, I don't know if it was that good. It was like a Radio Shack thing, but I remember I had a map of the world, like spread out on the screen with all the different bands.
Yeah.
Wow, I wish I was seven. Why can't I be seven again, my friends? Hey, what was I going to talk about? Here's a small victory, and this is ridiculous. That I've been looking forward to this for weeks. You want to hear something stupid, Riley?
Sure.
About 2 weeks ago, my Metro card got scratched up, and it was a 30-day Metro card.
You got another one, didn't you?
Well, that's what I sent it in, because I was like, oh, I'm bummed out. I just spent $75 on this or whatever it cost, and I only got 2 weeks in, and it got scratched up in my wallet. I sent it to the
Metro Card Central.
The MBTA there.
Yeah.
And I've been waiting. I've been going to my mailbox like, I wonder if they're going to send me a new Metro card. Why is that so exciting? Out of all the things in my life, my wife's in town. I got a show to do every morning, but I just can't, like, it's Christmas. And they sent me two freshly packed 7-day unlimited Metro cards. And I was thrilled. And they sent me a little letter.
I had the month-long one get effed up.
That's what happened.
And they sent me, they credited my account.
They just credited your account?
Yeah, because I paid for it with an ATM card.
Oh, okay.
And they just gave me a credit. Like, New York's the greatest damn city in the world.
I know.
Yes,
that was what it was. You're happy when the bureaucracy works, when the things that they're supposed to provide for you, they do provide. Because a lot of people who don't live in New York don't realize that we're not here, you know, wasting a bunch of gas every day or sitting in traffic. Yep. I'm not, anyways. Most people here take the train, and it was just thrilling for some reason.
Why do you think Bloomberg got reelected?
Because I got my Metro card.
Exactly.
That is not a lie because I'll tip it right now. I voted for him.
Yeah.
And one of the things that went through my head as I voted for him was 311 is the best thing I've ever used.
Yep. And I know the guy that set it up. I used to smoke cigars.
That's right.
That's right. Commissioner Gino Mancini.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, I found I was thrilled because with the Metro cards, I got a 7-day unlimited, 2 7-day unlimited in wrappers.
One for you, one for Mishner.
And one was in a rubber band around the Metro cards, a $100 bill said from Mike. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, that's all. So let's get into some of these polls here. This is very exciting stuff, people. This is very exciting stuff. First of all, the smug, well-coiffed, crutched Scooter Libby could not charm the American people with his post-indictment hobbling around. 79% of those polled in a recent Pew poll believe that the indictment of Libby is important to the nation. Along with that comes 43% of the people now believe that the U.S. and British leaders were mostly lying about claims of weapons of mass destruction that led to the war in Iraq. That is up from 31% in February. But dig this, 43% still think the leaders got bad intelligence. Now, would somebody please tell these idiots that the facts are the bad intelligence was manufactured by the White House Iraq Group and the Vice President's office, who Libby worked for. So let's just make it 86% believe they lied. Is it wrong just to lump those together? Because I'm compensating for the idiots that refuse to acknowledge the facts. So let's say, this is my math, Riley, 86% of the people believe they lied, and the other 14% are completely out of their mind. I almost did it, yes, retarded perhaps not on the voter polls. I don't know.
No, here's what's happening, and we talked about this before. When you get indicted for lying to a grand jury,
yes,
that's something that an average Joe can relate to. Because if an average Joe gets called in front of a grand jury and lies, he knows he's going to jail.
Exactly.
Okay? He knows there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Even if he had a high-priced lawyer, an average guy is going to go to jail. And they look at Scooter Libby, and they say, well, what is he charged with doing? And see, this is where the Republicans have miscalculated, because they think, well, it's no big thing. He just had a lapse of memory. No. average people don't figure guys like Scooter Libby are supposed to have a lapse of memory, not when they're testifying in front of a grand jury.
And also, they know that the leaking of a secret agent, I mean, even if you're seven, you know you don't do that. The secret agent's a secret agent because it has to be secret. And when somebody says that guy's a secret agent, that's a bad guy. You don't have to be 10 to understand that.
Yes.
And then the success of the news media, the media actually, and also the blog world, and also everybody who was able to link this to the bad intelligence that was maneuvered by the vice president's office and the White House Iraq group, that's really been successful, that people are starting to connect all the dots.
Well, it's not finished yet. That's the main thing people need to realize. This is not over.
Oh, it's going to get good.
Somebody's going to really begin the process of looking at exactly what the administration knew was false in the run-up to the war.
I've begun that process already.
And once that happens, lame duck will be a charitable term for George W. Bush.
Well, that's right. In the same way, as I said yesterday, Riley, George Bush has about a 36-point approval rating, and Dick Cheney has about a 19-point approval rating. And I think since most people, both Republican and Democrats alike, think that Cheney has been and is now actually running the country, using Bush as a BS delivery vessel, it's only fair to average him, and this is Marin's math. So I give the presidency a 27-point approval rating. That's my math. That means that 63% disapprove or are close to it. Some just can't see past the myth of the office, and they will fall the hardest when everything comes down, or they are the hardest of heads, and they will never see the light. But that is where I put it.
Well,
right? No,
it's fine. And believe me, folks, there is always going to be, in a country of 300 million people, there are always going to be folks who just don't see it, who just don't get it, who follow for whatever. Yeah, because it crosses the wires in the back of their heads.
Their brain won't let them.
No, their brain will not let them believe that a president of the United States, a president that they voted for, could do this to them. But he's been doing it to them since day one.
I wonder how those people feel. I was going to talk about that in light of the French the nationalist Le Pen who came out yesterday, the president of the Nationalist Party. I was just wondering, when we talk about nationalism, I really wonder about the people that were so furious and so full of a jingoistic rage after 9/11, and in terms of moving towards Iraq. I wonder how they feel now, the people that have changed their mind and what that makes them feel. Now let's get into another poll here, because this is very interesting. Around 65% of those polled in this new Pew Research poll said they don't, D-O-N, apostrophe T, want to see Roe v. Wade overturned. Yet 40% would like to see Samuel Alito, who is bound to overturn it, confirmed as a Supreme Court justice. They need convincing. I'm convinced that the Democrats, O'Reilly, should fight Alito because the numbers are with them. 65% of those polled don't want to see Roe v. Wade overturned. That means there could be some momentum. And bottom line, this guy Samuel Alito is always going to side with the president's, always going to side with big business. And if these polls are true and common sense is true, Americans know that those things are working against him.
Yeah, but you know what? The Republicans, particularly in Congress, you remember those 600-page talking points they got?
Yeah.
Contained in those talking points was an effort, and we're seeing it happen day by day, to kind of centralize Alito, to try and make it seem as though he really hasn't made up his mind on the abortion. There's been a couple of really back-channel, page 26 stories in the paper lately about how Alito has been talking to different people. And in fact, it's gotten to the point now the Democrats are looking at something else that he may have a problem with in terms of recusing himself from a mutual funds case where he had an investment. But beyond that, the Republicans are trying to mainstream this guy and trying to get folks to believe, which is why you have that gap between people who want to maintain Roe v. Wade and the people that still think Alito should be confirmed. Because the key factor there is whether or not they actually believe Alito will overturn it, vote to overturn it.
So they're making him look like a nice guy. Look, he's touching people.
He's a mainstream guy. Yeah. And he hasn't made up his mind on abortion yet.
Yeah, but that's a PR campaign.
Of course it's a PR.
Yeah, and so people are being duped. It's amazing to me, even as a radio personality, even as somebody in the medium, just what people are willing to believe and how those messages infiltrate the brain. It's going to be interesting. We're going to have a guest on a little later that's going to address some of that. Leslie Savin is author of Slam Dunks and No-Brainers, Language in Your Life, The Media Business, Politics, and Like Whatever, who really sort of parses language and the power of language, because that's the trigger. That is the equation. That is the mathematics of messaging. And
really?
It worked. Yeah, I think so.
Oh, well, can she explain the term basically?
Yes.
I want somebody to explain basically.
This is what this woman does.
Really?
Yeah, she,
oh, wow, I'm looking forward to this.
It is an entire book of that. You know, she can explain, I don't know, whatever. You know, she can explain
all
that.
Night.
It, she addresses Ebonics. She addresses NASCAR talk. She addresses, I mean, she...
Everything.
She's like a semiotician. Is that a word? A semiotician? A semiotic person? Yeah. All right, well, you know, I'll work on that. Semanticist.
Semanticist. Linguist.
We got to talk about the kings of oil. The kings of all the five of the major oil companies sat before the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee and were grilled a bit. And it was interesting what they said and how they defended their horrendous greed. That in a second. 16 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Nothing to lose. Makes you laugh at the troubling news. Sometimes I wonder if he's hitting the booze. Al Franken,
King of the Jews.
Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We'll be talking talking about the kings of oil in just a second. I think we need to get into a couple of other news stories. We'll do the iNews in a minute. Is that Brian from Everett I see on the phone? Don't put him on yet, but how's his head? Is he all right, Brendan? Yeah, he seems okay. All right, we'll talk to him in a minute. As you know, Brian from Everett is our in-house kind of insomniac, bipolar songwriting friend.
And pianist.
I hope he owes us a song, right? I thought he did
owe
us a song.
Yeah, he does owe us a song.
I wonder how that's coming, Brian.
Yeah.
All right, maybe we'll put him on in a minute. This is some horrendous stuff in Jordan. Three hotels in Amman, Jordan, were attacked by suicide bombers yesterday. The Radisson, the Grand Hyatt, the Days Inn, all these basically American chains. I think the Radisson, as you said before the show, Riley, has some Swiss connection.
Swedish, I'm sorry. Swedish.
There were three separate blasts that seemed stylistically Al-Qaeda in their synchronization and their targeting. The Jordanian cabinet said about 57 people were killed and 110 were wounded. Jordan is a fairly Western-friendly Arab nation.
Yes, it is. And this is like very obviously Al-Qaeda's work, very obviously has the stamp of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, a guy who, by the way, detests the Jordanian monarchy.
And he is the self-declared leader of Al-Qaeda in Mesopotamia. He's gotten bin Laden's approval. The United States already has a $25 million reward for his capture. And also Jordanian officials are familiar with al-Zarqawi. He was sentenced in absentia for taking part in the 2002 assassination of a U.S. diplomat, Lawrence Foley, who was shot to death in his front yard in Amman. Now, let's go into this a little bit about Tony Blair, right? I need to understand something because I'm sitting there reading the story. I'm doing research. Yesterday in Parliament, Tony Blair proposed a 90-day detention of terror suspects without charge.
And yes.
It was voted down by 322 members of Parliament to 219 members of Parliament. And apparently this is Blair's first House of Commons defeat since becoming Prime Minister. And some conservatives think that he should step down. Why doesn't our system work like that? Why can't we just have... why can't enough people in Senate go, we think the President should step down and he has to actually address that?
Yeah, it's an interesting... See, for Americans, this is very interesting and probably a little perplexing because if the House of Representatives had a bunch of Democrats that stood up, like John Conyers, for example, and said, hey, Bush needs to resign, they'd just be consigned to some loony bin
right.
Quacks or something.
But this is the way this works here.
This is the way this works. And see, when you have 49 labor members of the House of Commons who rebelled against Blair, who's the leader of their party.
Got it.
That weakens Blair to the point that now the conservatives, who, by the way, got no game at all,
right,
can jump up and say, well, you know, he ought to step down. He ought to resign. They're in their dreams.
He could be a lame duck, they're trying to say.
They're trying to say, but it's nothing like that. But what's important here, Mark, and I think people ought to be very clear about what happened. What Blair wanted to do was be able to detain any terrorist suspect in Britain for up to 90 days without charge. And certainly this was not an unpopular thing after the July 7th bombings. Mm. Okay. But what, the British public was not down with this. They were not behind the idea of detaining people for night. Now, mind you, in America, apparently the CIA can detain people for the rest of their natural lives and get away with
and,
it.
And not tell the people
and
of
not
America.
Tell anybody this, anything.
This is the difference, and we've talked about this before in the sense that it's a victory for parliamentary democracy, that because it shows a commitment to dealing with terrorism as a law enforcement issue as opposed to a vague set of directives devised by the prime minister with military or intelligence organizations that supersedes established legal protocol. Certainly in a country like in America, because I was thinking about this myself, we've had these discussions before, if you aren't going to do this, if you can't just throw people in prison for no reason at all other than you think something,
yeah.
And we have this terrorist threat, the only other way to do it is to make sure that communications on an international level with law enforcement and intelligence agencies are sufficient enough that they can actually properly do their job without having to supersede the law.
Well, yeah, and what you have to do is create a situation where people who would commit acts of terror, whether it's Zarqawi, whether it's led by bin Laden, whether it's led by somebody in Eastern Europe, where they really have a fear of getting caught. One of the reasons why these bombings were so easy to do in Jordan is because there was very little security around hotels in Jordan. Nobody thought they would strike there, even though Zarqawi is Jordanian, has a long history of hating the Jordanian monarchy, and certainly detests America and detests Israel.
Well, it's fascinating because we talked about this before the show, Riley. I mean, how do you really secure someplace? I mean, when you walk around New York, anywhere in New York, you got to realize that if somebody wants to do this, if the law enforcement agencies don't have tabs on these guys who are capable of doing this, they're going to do it.
Well, yeah. Ask yourself this question.
Yeah.
There's a $25 million bounty on Zarqawi's head. How come you think nobody's wanted to take anybody up on it?
Because they're scared of him.
That's right. And they're more scared of him than they are the combined intelligence agencies of the world at this point.
Well, it's interesting. I guess what they call a backbench compromise was made that extended the time of detention from what was established
14 days
to 28 days as opposed to 90 without charge. I guess if there is a charge, they can be held indefinitely according to the charge until they're arraigned or what have you.
Well, yeah.
So let's talk. We'll put Brian on in a minute. You want to tell me a little something about Jack Abramoff. That's getting interesting.
Oh, sorry, I can't say that.
That's getting interesting. And
yeah.
We will get into the Kings of Oil and their responses to the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee in just a few minutes. It's 27 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Before past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're going to do the iNews in just a few minutes. We're going to talk about the Kings of Oil in just a couple minutes. But first, let me just give a little air time to my buddy Brian up there in Everett, Washington. What's up, Brian? How are you, man?
Did you guys all sit around and have your New Testament Bible study this morning, you and Al and Randy and all those
of
people?
Of course. Yeah. Like every morning we did that.
I know I got a song, and I got a Yamaha Electone MR700 and all this stuff. And it's, I don't know, man. I just stress out, and I got stuff going on, people picking at me, people poking at me.
Yeah.
So anyway, but, hey, but I'll tell you what.
What's
up,
buddy?
If you're losing your job, you can always crash on my couch, man.
If I lose my job, I can crash on your couch in Everett?
Crash on the couch, man. I mean, I understand how it is. You need to get back to your roots.
It doesn't sound like there's any crashing going on in your apartment. I mean, when do you sleep, man?
I sleep from about 8 to 3, 8
yeah.
to 4.
Yeah. What's been going on? How do you feel about the world, Brian? How you react?
The world?
Yeah.
In the world, in my personal world, or the world through the eyes of the media? The world, you ever heard the song Riding the Storm Out?
Sure. REO Speedwagon.
I ain't missing nothing in the city, I'll put it that way.
Uh-huh.
Wow. Hey, I got a joke for you.
Okay. It's not dirty, is it?
No, but it's
okay.
Funny.
Okay.
Hey, did you hear the joke about the paranoid guy?
No.
Hey, well, I can't tell you on the air. He might be listening.
Did you write that one? Did you write that joke?
I didn't write it down. I invented it. I made it up.
Okay.
But hey, I know you're going to have Al on the show on Tuesday, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
So I'll have a song to convert you all to. I'm pro Jesus, anti Christian. Does that make sense?
Sure it does.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of the Ayn Rand model of the kind of the Serpico model.
Okay, all right.
The profit guy. So, I don't know.
Brian,
just as long as, if I made any sense, I'm sorry, but I'll get back to you next week.
Do you have any, are you taking your medicine, or?
Yeah, I take it every night. You
okay.
Know? You know, it's like, that's only what, you can't reduce everything. Hey, you know, here's the thing. You say I'm bipolar or whatever. Well, guess what, you know?
Yeah.
Things go on. And, you know, I'll freak out on occasion, but guess what? You know, people try to figure out what's going on with Brian. Well, guess what? You know what happened?
What?
A thought occurred to me.
Yeah.
You know, and that happened.
All right. You know? I'm not saying bipolar in a bad way, you know.
I've got a top pole, I've got a top of my brain, and I've got a bottom of my butt. And those are the two poles.
Okay, buddy. Now, look, our Kalo, the Costco ho, is going to be out in Seattle. Are you going to be performing anywhere? Can he come to your house?
Am I going to be performing?
Yeah. Can he come to where you work? Or?
I don't have a job right now. I quit the job because, I just have a low tolerance for the,
You don't got to tell me.
It interfered with the creative process.
You know, I'm trying to cook. I'm trying to make good food for people, and there's all this little head game interaction going on. With
no kidding. Yeah.
You
don't got to tell me.
People are smoking pot in the kitchen, and people are nasty and all this stuff and all this crap.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Brian, take it easy.
Yeah, I try.
Okay. We'll play your song for Al next week.
I'll have a song for you guys next week.
Okay, thanks, man.
Okay.
All right, Brian and Everett, ladies and gentlemen.
Left awesome. Another job.
Awesome. Yeah, poor guy. Yeah, but I know, it's hard to work for somebody.
I know. Stuff happens.
Okay. Moving on. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have an iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. All right. From ABC News, Democrats. Yay, Dan. Democrats win elections in New Jersey, Virginia, California. Democrats win elections in New Jersey, Virginia, California. Translation, side of good poised to blow another opportunity. From USA Today, Kansas schools can teach intelligent design. Kansas schools can teach intelligent design. Translation, Kansas children to study Atlantis, unicorn. From Associated Press, gonorrhea rates fall, but other STDs rise. Gonorrhea rates fall, but other STDs rise. Translation, clap off. leave it at that. So let's do this oil thing and then do Abramoff, because, they're not necessarily connected, but the heads of Exxon, Chevron, Shell Oil USA, ConocoPhillips, and BP American, whose combined efforts made $25 billion in profits in the July-September quarter, were taken to task by the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee yesterday. They were being accused of price gouging, worse yet, price gouging and profiteering off of Hurricane Katrina. And look, given that Americans are in a crunch and are being drained financially by the cost of oil, you would think that there would be some explanation for price surges. And all Lee Raymond, the king of Exxon, could say was the oil business goes up and down and that the profits are in line with other industries. This is the kind of validation that the Republican policy inflates. It's just the nature of the business that thousands of Americans can't afford to feed their families or even get to work because of what these companies are doing to them. That is the kind of business that Republican policy supports and defends.
$25 billion from July to September. All right. We're not talking about a whole year's worth of profits here. We are talking about one quarter worth of profits here. And the 26 biggest oil companies in America are on record to go to $96 billion by the end of the year. And see, Barbara Boxer, God bless Barbara Boxer, the senator from California, because she got in their face and said, wait a minute. How much is your bonus going to be this year, pal?
Right.
How much are you making off of the backs of working Americans? All right, if you want to say that the price gouging you're doing is actually just capitalism at work, how are you benefiting from the capitalism?
Well, look at this. When pressed about this was the thing that really got me, is that when they were pressed about the increase of 24 cents a gallon in the aftermath of Katrina, King Raymond of Exxon, Conoco, sorry. King Raymond of Exxon. I said Conoco before, but it's ConocoPhillips. I apologize. But King Raymond of Exxon summed it all up. Quote, to minimize the increase in price while at the same time recognizing if we keep the price too low, we would quickly run out at the service station, end quote.
They ran out anyway.
But the thing is that if you can't afford it, stay and drown. I mean, you know what I mean? Isn't that the, that is the reason? Adapt or die. These guys worked hard for their multi-million-dollar salaries. It's not their fault you can't stay in the game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this is essentially what they are telling the American people here.
Mm-hmm.
They've got nothing. They've got no reason why. For example, on Labor Day weekend this year, prices rose in New Jersey to $3.39 a gallon.
Just business.
Just business.
Now, what about this? Explain this to me. Because I read that Democrats on the committee wanted the oil kings to maybe provide some sort of windfall tax. Now, if I understand it correctly, and I don't know these things as well as I should, I need to learn them, this would force oil companies to give back to the people it compromised the most if the money was allocated properly. Is that what the idea of a windfall tax is?
That's what the idea is. But see, the oil companies always get you on the back end with a windfall profits tax because okay. They tried it once before.
Right.
What happens is they don't end up developing any new wells, they end up, you know, ramping down production and then screaming bloody murder because they don't have enough money to do what they have to do.
So what happens is if they allow a windfall tax, that money is put out and investors lose confidence in the oil industry because why would they invest in something if the money is just going to be, you know, not moved towards more profits and profits to them, so everything gets stifled.
Well, yeah, but see, now the progressive argument to this could be, well, if they don't spend big bucks on oil development, that would at some point force Americans to start conserving and force the country to start looking at different kinds of fuels.
They all say they're working on that. You know,
yeah,
that's
right.
Their big thing. Yeah, we're doing that.
I'm waiting for the chicken fat one.
Exactly. We got a guy that's boiling things, and it's going to drive the cars in the future. Well, the thing is that it's hard to conserve for some people. A lot of people rely on their cars for work. A lot of people have to drive miles to work, and these they have no answer for these people other than, hey, you know, business is business. Sorry, good luck with whatever you got going.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. So now let's talk about Jack Abramoff. This is super Jack, the power lobbyist who is up to his neck in everything from bilking millions of dollars out of Indian tribes to setting up sweatshops to being involved with Tom DeLay and sending him on golf trips.
Yeah.
But now it's like this, there's a federal investigation that he's circling the drain, man. So what do you got over there, Riley?
All right. This is what's happening to Jack Abramoff, the long and the short of it. And to some extent, folks, this doesn't, you know, the outcome of this particular piece of information doesn't really matter. It turns out Jack Abramoff asked for $9 million from the president of the West African nation of Gabon to arrange a meeting with President George W. Bush. Now, he did, in fact, have that meeting. There is no evidence that Gabon actually ponied up the money, all right? So it may well be that in this instance he did not do anything particularly illegal. But understand that this investigation is not just looking at the overt stuff involved with his Indian tribes. What they're starting to look at now is the question of these small charities and these small organizations that he set up that he apparently used to launder money, and the government thinks he was using them to hide income. In other words, they take money from these different Indian tribes or whatever, funnel them through these nonprofits, and then they end up going back into his pocket. One of these things, one of these little consulting groups, happened to be run by his brother.
Wow. See, and now this, and the great thing about the Abramoff case is that there's no end to the number of people in Congress that could be connected to this guy. When this thing blows up, it's going to blow up big.
It's going to blow up big, and see, he's going to have the same problem that Scooter Libby has. If it turns out he's been hiding income from the government, in other words, tax evasion, every American who pays a dime to the federal government understands what tax evasion is and understands what would happen to them if the IRS was on them. So Abramoff would be done.
And I'll tell you, this guy just, you know, by virtue of what he does, is going to be unappealing to most Americans.
Yeah, absolutely, because this is absolute sleaze.
It's complete sleaze, and it's got nothing to do with helping people. It's got nothing to do with government in the way that it's supposed to serve. It's got everything to do with facilitating corruption on behalf of the government, and most of them are Republicans, I got to be honest with you.
Oh, by the way, before I forget,
yes, sir.
Gabon is one of the places that the United States routinely criticizes for human rights abuses, so you might want to ask yourself, what is Abramoff seeking $9 million from a human rights abuser to do?
I'll tell you what to do, to set up factories to make our shoes.
There you go.
It's 45 past the hour. We're going to talk a little bit about Judith Miller, and she might be looking for work,
gem.
I guess. And the new Supreme Court Chief Justice Roberts is slowing an investigation down because it might be one of their guys. So we'll get into that. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hi, this is former Labor Secretary Robert Reich. Remember me? I helped preside over the greatest economic expansion in our nation's history, creating over 20 million new jobs during Clinton years. I'm sorry to hear that the Bush administration has either outsourced or eliminated your job entirely. But while you're waiting for things to turn around, stay tuned to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Give me back my job again.
Fifty past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program is screwed up. Screwed up before the break. It's not Chief Justice John Roberts. It's Senator Pat Roberts. I just saw Roberts made some assumptions, was throwing the story to Riley. This is Senator Pat Roberts, the Republican chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, who is now stifling the investigation that Denny Hastert and Bill Stockdropper Frist
Stockboy.
Yeah, that we're excited to get going into who leaked the information about the secret chain of CIA torture prisons that are out there manufacturing terrorists unbeknownst to the American population. And also there's another leaker, and I guess Pat Roberts said it's looking like it's one of ours, so let's not get too excited here, fellas.
That's right. What do they say in Kansas? Whoa, Nelly.
Yeah,
that's pretty much what they're doing. See, some of this, part of the reason why they're doing this is that they can read the papers and see the results of the elections on Tuesday just as well as anybody else.
That's right.
And they don't want to start, you know, I guess what, spitting in the wind of American public opinion about Republicans right now. The Justice Department is, in fact, looking into this, I believe, at the request of the CIA. They will determine whether a crime was committed. And at this point, like I said yesterday, it's very difficult for a Senate committee to investigate a leak unless they first establish the veracity of the leak. In other words, you can't say you breached national security if it turns out that the story that the Washington Post first reported was false. And the Senate Intelligence Committee does not, I don't think, want to be put in a position of verifying the Washington Post story publicly before going after whoever leaked it. Plus, Trent Lott said, hey, you know what? It may have been, as you pointed out, Mark, one of ours.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the thing. And if they throw out one of theirs, the convoluted reasoning in this story is that they are protecting something. What was leaked was information that I think is important for the American people to know, is that there is a secret covert policy that involves the use of a chain of prisons throughout Eastern Europe and some in the Arab world that are being used to torture and detain suspects of terrorism without charge. And who the hell knows what's going on in those prisons? One thing we know for sure is that acts of terrorism since 9/11, since the Iraq War, have escalated internationally. And I can only assume that engaging in this type of behavior on an international level is going to not only compromise our national security, but it's also going to make the image of the United States even more polluted in other places in the world. It is not a sign of strength. So the fact that they're doing this behind the backs of the American people, although some people are like, hey, they know what they're doing. They're in charge of that. What do I know? Well, I know from my gut instinct that it can't be good. And they're not concerned about that. What they're concerned about is who the hell said this.
Well, you know, show you how this little push for an investigation has ground to a screeching halt. You know, the CIA notified the Justice Department that there was a release of classified information that came with that Post article. After the CIA finishes assessing what damage was done, prosecutors in the Justice Department will determine whether or not a criminal investigation is then warranted. Now, when they ask Pat Roberts how long that might take, you know what he said?
What?
Decades!
Oh, boy, this could go on a while.
He's in no hurry here.
This could go on till the end of days, the end of times, till the end of the world. So, look, what is going on with Judith Miller? Did she quit? Is she pushed out? What happened?
Well, both. If you want to look at it that way, she signed an agreement. They were apparently negotiating on the down low for a good while about this, but Judith Miller is no longer associated with the New York Times. She described it as gaining her freedom from the convent of the New York Times, which is about as self-serving as you're going to get. She's got a piece in the paper, printed a letter she wrote to the editor that explained her position. Originally, she wanted to write an essay for the paper's op-ed page, challenging some of the criticisms that were made by some of her own colleagues. But you know what? Gail Collins, a sensible woman if I ever saw one, the editor of the editorial page said, we don't use the op-ed page for back and forth between one part of the paper and another.
Okay.
So on that level, she didn't get to print what I imagine would be a pretty self-serving exit letter. But she did get to print a letter in the op-ed pages, or actually a letter to the editor part of the New York Times, explaining what her position was in the whole Scooter Libby mess.
Uh-huh.
And hey, you know, she's now saying she's being deluged with offers. Here's hoping she finds work. All right,
that's nice of you.
Yeah.
Look here, folks. Before we end this hour, I just want to say, look, even if there is no cogent, is that the word
cogent
party platform for the Democrats, people are definitely fed up with the Republicans, and we can only hope that the momentum we saw yesterday snowballs for another year or two into the senatorial elections. All right, Republicans are saying that gubernatorial elections in New Jersey and Virginia were shoe-ins, but let me tell you something, folks, they're scared. The fact that Arnold couldn't even get traction out of his propositions in California is also an indication. Recent poll numbers and the fact that Bush was a liability in the Virginia governor race is an indication. People are starting to smell the stench of political and corporate corruption that this administration enables and is guilty of. The stench of the swamp that New Orleans became after that Republican incompetence down there, the stench of energy prices escalating as winter descends, the stench of rotting bodies in Iraq and dead Americans coming home in boxes from a war based on lies manufactured by this administration, the stench of religious bigotry on behalf of fundamentalists egged on and supported by this administration. I mean, come on, folks. The stench of legislation that completely compromises individual rights in the face of corporate crimes and personal bankruptcy, untreated disease because of unaffordable insurance, fear coerced out of all of us by this administration to maintain control. The wrath of our distrust will continue to rid this country of this rot. I apologize, Riley. I got a little Allen Ginsberg-y there, but what I want to do...
No, I'm thinking Marin.
I want to provoke people here. I want to know what you think. I mean, is this momentum real? Are people waking up? What kind of experiences are you having with the conservatives in your life? Are you proudly wearing your anti-Bush gear again? Is the fear left you? Call us at 866-303-2270. We're going to share some poll numbers with you. I don't want to let the Republicans take this momentum and trivialize it, because from every indication on every point, it seems that Americans are fed up with this crap, and we might be able to, you know, to sort of facilitate some change. I'd love it if we had some actual ideas and a platform. 57 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Blah, 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 blah.
It's 6 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Morning.
Dig this. This is not important political news, but the Prince of Darkness, Ozzy Osbourne, has been invited to perform at the annual Royal Variety Performance in Cardiff, Wales on November 21st. That's for the Queen. Apparently, he has turned down this thing once before because he had something else to do, but he's actually canceling Spike TV's Video Game Awards to make time for Queen Elizabeth.
Ooh.
Wow, she must feel special.
I would.
Apparently, he's one of the few English performers or English rock stars that hasn't become a knight. You know, I didn't have any real... We just got this list of people who have declined, the honor of becoming a knight. I'm glad that still exists. I mean, it's interesting to see, like, Elton John or to see, like, Mick Jagger, who you would think would be a rebel, become knights, even though... Because they're programmed. It's like here how some people will not see the president as a bad guy, no matter how rebellious or how screwed up anyone is. If they're given the opportunity to be a knight, they're like, oh, yes, please, thank you. Thank you.
Hey, listen, my wife, who was born in London, don't say she could be the most radical person in the world. Don't say anything about the Queen.
Yeah, Keith Richards said it was a paltry honor when Mick Jagger buckled in.
Poultry or paltry?
Paltry.
Poultry.
Poultry. It was a chicken honor.
Chicken. Exactly.
Poultry. You see that?
Jagger was a chicken for taking it.
You get a sword and you get a nice thigh. Here we go. Yeah, look, here's what we're talking about. Bush's approval rating. This is important stuff now, because I know polls are polls and, you know, there's no reason to trust polls, but these are most polls, my friends. Most polls are around these numbers. Bush's approval rating, 38%, an all-time low on his overall overall job approval. 34% approve his handling of the economy. 35% approve his handling of foreign policy. 39% approve his handling of terrorism. 32% approve of his handling of Iraq. Now, I am got my own math on this stuff. This is from an NBC Wall Street Journal poll. There was a Pew poll out a few days ago, roughly the same numbers. I say that because George Bush is about 36% approval rating, and we had a poll a couple of weeks ago that put Dick Cheney at about 19 points approval rating. I think since most of us, Republican or Democrat, think that Cheney is actually running the country and using Bush as his BS delivery vessel, it's only fair to average them, folks. So I give the presidency a 27-point approval rating. That's Mark math. That means 63% disapprove or else close to it. And I think there are just some people that are just stupid or can't see through the myth of the presidency. Now, in light of the fact that Democrats won in Virginia and in New Jersey in very, you know, profound ways with big margins, especially in Virginia, I think that it's important to acknowledge that the Republicans are trying to just push this off, write it off, trivialize it as you know, they were shoo-ins. But I think there has to be a momentum. If there isn't a platform, there's certainly a momentum against this president. And I've encouraged you to give me a call to let me know how that's going, because I know that it's I see a lot more anti-Bush stuff being worn proudly as opposed to with fear as a couple years ago. I know that some conservatives have lost their perk and their confidence in the workplace.
And well, they should. What have they done?
Right. They haven't done anything but make it harder for people to live in this world.
Overreach and rob.
Well, let's see what people have to say. Leslie in Illinois, what is your experience as of late?
Hey, Leslie.
Hi.
Hi.
My experience as of late is that no matter where I go now, I've got a slash Bush and an impeach Bush button on my coat and on my purse, and everybody comes up to me saying, "I really like your pin. Where did you get it?"
Really?
But really.
That's great.
At work, I used to post anti-Bush cartoons in the mailroom, and people would take them down right away. Now they stay up.
Uh-huh. Look at that.
On my front door, I have, unfortunately, the running death toll.
Uh-huh.
But people are now knocking on my door saying, "Where are you getting that information? This is really terrible." A guy moved into the building last week saying, "The reason I bought this unit was because I saw all those anti-Bush stuff on your door, and I really was proud." So,
oh,
yeah,
that's great.
A lot of places. I've had an impeach Bush bumper sticker on my car since 2003.
Good for you.
And people used to really give me trouble about it, and now people are coming up to me saying, "Where can I get one?"
So you really, in your area, you really feel that there is a sense of change and that there is a momentum building against this president. Whether or not, you know, it's for pro-Democrat, it doesn't necessarily matter at this point, but they are becoming awakened to the lies that are this administration.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I have a real personal experience that I'm not going to go into in great detail, but really personal experience in somebody in my family who had been supportive of Bush from the get-go.
Yeah.
About 3 weeks ago, very quietly said to me, "You know, I didn't vote for him this time."
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I said, "I know, I've been keeping tabs."
That's so funny. Did they ask you, like, "Don't tell anybody else"? Was it
that's
that?
Right. So now I just said it on Air America Radio.
They're coming out. You can't judge them, you know. It's going to take some time for them to be proud of it.
Yeah.
Well, I know that, but I'm really proud of it. So.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for your call, Leslie.
Yeah. Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you for still being on the air. And just as an aside, this is something that I didn't say I was going to say, but I've been writing all kinds of letters and sending emails.
Oh, thank you. So many people are, I don't know what exactly is going to happen, but I'm certainly not going to keep it from you guys when I know exactly what's going to happen.
Well,
but I appreciate your support.
Yeah, thank you both for being there.
All right.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Take care, Leslie.
Hey, Omar in Westchester, long time, buddy. Where you been?
What's up, Omar?
Hey, what's going on, baby? How you doing? How you making out?
I'm good, man. You?
First of all, what is this foolishness about December 15th? You're leaving us. That's why I want to know what's the deal with that.
Yeah, I wish I knew what the deal was. It's like, from best I can tell, they're saying it's about money. They're saying it's about change. You know, I'm trying not to take it personally, but there's still a little hope. I'll let you know exactly what's going on as time goes on.
I'll be listening, and if you got any problems, you let me know.
I will. Yeah.
Well, listen, you know what it is? I think that, you know, everybody was on Bush's bandwagon, just like Giuliani.
Yeah.
Everybody was on a bandwagon, and now that you see he lied, although a lot of them probably internally knew that he lied, you know, now it shows. I mean, even Stevie Wonder can see this one. You know, so, I mean, so now they're looking and saying, okay, it's time to abandon ship. But what happens is the American voters are like, you know what, I'm never going to forget how this man led us and how a lot of people encouraged us to follow him and look what he did.
Yeah.
So now a lot of people will vote the other way on spite. So we as Democrats and liberals have to come out with a strong message, whether we have differences with Dean or whatever. We got to come out strong, because the bottom line is to take back what has been ours and, you know, how we progressed for the last, well, before these 5 years,
yeah,
before that, though.
I think you're right.
Take care, baby.
Okay,
All right, thanks, Omar.
I think he's right.
No, well, you know, he hit on something very important. Mm-hmm. In order for the Democrats to capitalize on this, and the way you measure how well Democrats do, of course, will be next November when the off-year elections take place. But there has got to be some kind of agreement, rapprochement, however you want to describe it, between congressional Democrats and Howard Dean.
Right.
Because there's a rift there that no one wants to talk about, but somebody's going to have to fix.
Well, in response to what happened in New Jersey and Virginia and in California, I think Dean made a basic comment just saying that it's very clear that the nation wants to go a different way. And I certainly think that if Dean got on board and somehow figured out a way to you know, mobilize his energy in collusion with some of the Congress and some of these senators that are making it difficult for him, we could really get a juggernaut going.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, at a point, what lessons are to be learned? Remember that Timothy Kaine and John Corzine, the governors-elect of New Jersey, very different kinds of Democrats.
Yeah.
John Corzine is an unrepentant progressive. If you look at his voting record, if you look what he's backed and championed over the years, he is a blue state progressive.
Yeah.
Kaine is not. Mm-hmm. Kaine is a more faith-based, values-based. They're running in two different places. You've got to find a way to put those two sides of the same coin together.
That's it. That's going to be tricky. It almost seems like there should be one person that is the
common point.
Right. Yeah. Some sort of the perfect mixture, and that's going to come through.
Well, so I think it's Hillary.
Well, yeah, I know. Well,
you don't look enthusiastic.
I don't see that happening. I don't know if it's me being naive or underestimating the American people. I just don't see her as being the person that's going to be president of the country. Not because she's a woman, not because for any other reason, just a stupid gut instinct of mine. I hope she can do it, but it's my gut instinct. What do I know?
How about Mark Warner? You think he might have a shot?
I'd like to see him dance.
I think he may start.
I'd like to see his moves.
I think we may be putting on the tramps right now for him to dance to. Because Mark Warner is going to come out. He's going to be one of the players in politics, even though he's out of office now. He is going to be one of the players in the run-up to the 2008 election.
I've got to see how he works the stage.
Yeah.
I want to see his chops.
Well, let's hope they don't put a hook on him and take him out like the Apollo.
Okay, 16 past the hour. We'll go ahead and stay on the phone. I think we have some more conversations to have around this. We have a product placement minute coming up, so that's always interesting. Stay with us. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just to wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yo.
I hope you're having a pretty good morning. If you're in your car with your kids or doing whatever you do, driving to work, sitting there alone at your computer in the middle of the night trying to figure out how you're going to get through another day, it's okay. Don't let them get you down. I'm trying not to, so I think that you can as well. I do realize now, being an employed person, just how hard it is to feel out of control of your own life in a work environment. And I know that some of you deal with that every day, and the rage that's seething within you on top of everything else is just hard to manage. And I hope that we provide some relief for you here in the morning. We're talking about Bush approval. Approval ratings now, 38% is where he's at. It's an all-time low on his overall job approval rating, and they get lower in some areas. On the economy, we're looking at 34%. On foreign policy, 35%, which I think is a gift, considering I just got an email from a guy. We're taking calls, too, by the way. I got an email from a guy from Germany, which I'll read in a second. But But first, look, this is it's an exciting time, I think, because people are getting sick of Bush. We just got a call from management saying that this show has to make more money or they won't be able to pay the security guards to escort me out of the building. Oh, so here's today's Morning Sedition Product Placement Minute. Hey, Riley, what's our product placement news story today, buddy?
Well, even though the year isn't over, Mark, Hollywood is already giving awards to itself. The annual Hollywood Film Festival culminated with the 2005 Hollywood Film Awards last month.
Well, that's great. Usually our product placement news stories are so horrible and depressing.
Yeah. By the way, Mark, what's that product sitting next to you?
Well, Riley, that's Greenleaf Solutions Super Gel Vomit Absorbent.
Great. Fans of Jake Gyllenhaal will be happy to know he won Breakthrough Actor of the Year for Jarhead and Brokeback Mountain. It was presented by his co-star from The Good Girl, the effervescent Jennifer Aniston.
Never again wipe up vomit and diarrhea with your hands. This unique product cleans up the mess on carpets and floors and helps prevent permanent damage. Watch how quickly it soaks up this spill.
That's impressive, Mark. The Breakthrough Actress of the Year, Rachel McAdams from Red Eye and The Wedding Crashers. She's also set to appear in The Family Stone next month.
Super Gel Vomit Absorbent contains millions of sponge flakes that soak up a liquid mess and turn it into a relatively dry material that can be vacuumed or swept. And a deodorant eliminates the stench of bodily waste. See?
Why, it smells like a pine forest.
Uh-huh.
The Hollywood Film Awards can foreshadow what happens at the Oscars, particularly since many of the movies that won this time haven't even been released yet. Mm. For example, Best Supporting Actor is Matthew Broderick for the new musical The Producers, which isn't due for limited release until December.
Your hands never go near the mess with Super Gel Vomit Absorbent.
But remember, the year isn't over, and Steven Spielberg hopes to release another movie before January.
So the race for the Oscar is still on.
It sure is.
And that's today's Morning Sedition Product Placement Minute. So here's a dispatch from Germany in terms of how we're being seen abroad in the world because of Republican policy and Republican attempt to control the world through a horrendous torturing and violence. Here's a letter I got. Hi, Mark and Mark. I'd been to Germany 10 years ago, and everyone here loved Americans then. Yes, there were the occasional ugly Americans, but as long as I respected the culture, there was a great international camaraderie. I just wanted to tell you that as an American expat now living in Germany, married to a German, that I no longer speak English in public here. Lately, I feel so much hate emanating from people when they hear my American accent that I just don't speak English in public anymore, and I've been really trying to get my German accent perfected. We were at a Persian restaurant last night, and four other Americans came in shortly after us and sat down and started speaking American. It was so strange listening to them. They had no idea, as business tourists, they had no idea how bad it is for me and other expats. This has to change. I want to represent a decent country again. I would say more, but I think I've already made my point. Thanks for that email. Now let's talk to somebody who's in Dayton, Ohio, which is, you know, in some parts of Ohio, Republican stronghold is an understatement. Brian, how are you? What's going on in Dayton?
Hey, Brian.
How you guys doing today?
Pretty good, man.
Well, I'll tell you, for 5 years I've been screaming, yelling, anybody to listen to me about what's going on with this administration.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I do believe the momentum against Bush is building. However, his policies are in place. In Ohio, we had the referendum vote on issues 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Electoral reform? Yeah.
Yes, electoral reform. Take the election out of the hands of the state, you know, partisan, the Secretary of State, Kenneth Blackwell. Every one of those initiatives was voted down.
Were they as confusing as people were reporting on the ballot itself?
I don't believe so. I mean, I read them, and it was blatant. I'm very into politics. I don't think they were that confusing. And the thing was, is everybody I talked to that voted, everybody said they voted for issues 2, 3, 4, and 5. I just want to know how, on such a grand scale, it was defeated.
So you're saying that the actual issues on voter reform were rigged in the voting machines and made to lose.
I don't know if it was that or not. I don't want to say I'm a conspiracy theorist, but, I mean, a lot of people that I've talked to were very much in favor of issues 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah.
And for all of this,
how could they not? Yeah. Brian, I want to tell you something. We don't use the word conspiracy theorist. We use an independent speculative investigator.
There you go.
There's nothing to be ashamed of. I think you're absolutely right. It makes no sense to me either that something that would try to help a system that is broken would be voted down. But it is Ohio.
Oh, and also issue one, which was basically to give our tax dollars to corporations to help them build, passed.
Mm-hmm.
So I just I'm about to give up. That's the point. I just want to call.
No, man, don't never give up. Never, ever, ever give up.
Don't give up, because you know what's going to be really interesting is eventually this. I believe that it will come around. I believe that it's only going to get worse, because where the Republicans are now with the overreaching and what's coming out in the press, they no longer have any leverage in terms of making themselves look good. So I think eventually, just by virtue of their own, you know, corruption and lies, they are going to break down. So I think eventually it's going to turn around, Brian. So don't give up yet.
Yep, don't give up.
We can all hope.
There you go.
Thanks, man. I'm gonna hope then. Our guest, Leslie Sabin, will be here in a moment. She's going to tell us about language. She's the author of the book Slam Dunks and No Brainers, Language in Your Life, the Media Business, Politics, and Like Whatever. Because language is important, certainly in hypnotizing people. 27 past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
We are here. It's Thursday morning. I hope you're having a great Thursday morning, as I said. I'm trying to keep chipper, folks. Our next guest is the author of Slam Dunks and No Brainers, Language in Your Life, the Media, Business, Politics, and Like Whatever. She joins us in the studio this morning. Good morning, Leslie Sabin. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good.
Good, thanks. Good. Right. I appreciate you coming down here, because I don't know why I find this kind of stuff fascinating, because I know that in our entire, everything we do, any sort of cultural momentum is based on language and the way it's used. And I know that I have certain habits that are sort of contagious, and that these things are called, I don't know, are they called memes or ideas? But what impact does it have in the sense that, like, the way, like I'm doing it right now, the like. How does that happen, and how does that become encultured? Like, well, whatever.
Right. memes or viruses, yeah. It's a good way of describing it. And we can't, that's how we learn language at
right.
all. That's how children learn how to speak, by picking it up.
Mm-hmm.
It has a contagious quality to begin with. What I'm writing about and focusing on in this book is what I call pop language,
okay.
which is the stuff that starts as just popular phrases, mm-hmm. catchphrases, but it goes on to become sort of highly processed through the media
right.
generally, and is used and becomes sort of pre-tested. It's been so accepted, so well-honed that,
yeah.
that we start to be... it. Well,
yeah.
to back up for a second, regular people, real people, make up all language, of course,
sure.
you know, including the slang, and whether it's bling bling or fashionista
right.
or
right.
you go girl
mm-hmm.
or whatever. It comes, we start using it, and at the beginning, when it's close to the ground or the
yeah.
street or the office cubicle from where it comes, it's you know, it's creative, fun stuff.
Yeah.
And
then
but then the more fun it is, the more it's going to be used in ads, sitcoms, movies.
And also to use politically, to actually, part of the hypnosis of America has to do around language. And I've always wondered, like, when I look at George Bush, and you have a chapter in your book about NASCAR, about that sort of tough kind of regular guy
yeah.
type of thing, is that that's what, if he has any appeal left, which is very small, it's to those kind of people that actually see him as a regular guy. And he uses that kind of disposition in that kind of language, doesn't he?
Right, right. Like, most infamously, when he said, bring it on
right.
to Iraqi insurgents.
Right.
And they did bring it on, and the violence escalated after he said that. He sort of apologized after
right.
that.
Not much.
But it was something that he thought would sort of push a button among the American public. Yeah,
exactly.
He would sound tough, and then we would applaud him. I'm saying about this pop language that it is phrases like bring it on, I don't think so,
yeah.
hello,
yeah.
as if, duh,
yeah.
a lot of the put downs, although it's not just put downs.
Right.
And when we say this, we are speaking as if we are a crowd, as if we're not just our own individual self. We are a crowd. We have a crowd of millions behind us.
That understand the, that.
Yes, these phrases have built-in applause signs and laugh tracks. You know, and they make it more likely that we or whoever uses it will get the response that they want.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain to me, and we talked about this before you got here, can you explain to me how the word basically has become so ubiquitous in the English, let's put it this way, in American discourse?
Wow. That's one I didn't really go into, and I, in fact, use basically a lot. There's a few words like that. They're part like filler or placeholders, basically, mm-hmm. actually, exactly. That
you
I think
know,
I'm,
you know,
and
you
the
know.
You knows, right, right.
And you see me do stand up. I mean, when I'm on stage, it's you know, it's a little more graphic. But I'll use like I'll use. Just to punctuate things, that there's there as opposed to a pause, you use a word. Now, what about the politically incorrect things, and like what you have a chapter in here about Ebonics and the fight around Ebonics. What happened there? What was that about? That was something that was pop language that then became that was based in slang, in a community slang, and that what happened with that argument.
Well, the Ebonics controversy was really hyped up, and I think it was, yes, there were some, the school board in Oakland, California wanted to try using the language of the home for many of its students to help them improve on their more standard English,
mm-hmm.
and this was immediately seized upon by the right and the middle, as far as that goes, to say, no, we're not going, this is horrible, this is, you know. It, for me, I really, and I go into this in great detail, I think it was an excuse for racism, for a lot of frustrated racism that couldn't express itself otherwise, to come out, to just sort of say, we can't allow this. It was, you know, a lot of white people have just felt so stymied in being able to say whatever they want about black people that when they see a policy or a program that they disapprove of, whether it's affirmative action or Ebonics, they use it as a way to express
their frustrations. Well, yeah, it ends up being a way to kind of stereotype as many black people as they possibly can. But, you know, if you think about it, when it comes to Ebonics, Elvis Presley did not sing, "You are not anything but a hound dog." Okay,
right, right.
When you look at it that way. But there's one linguistic twist, and I'm not sure if it's really directly connected to Ebonics, but it's something I noticed over time, and that is the use of the word yo.
Yeah.
Okay. In the late 70s, early 80s, it was used at the beginning of sentences. By the 1990s, it was used at the end of sentences. Did you explore any of that?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's how we know when Riley's on a conference call. It was like, who's here? Yo, there's Riley.
Yeah, it's just, for whatever reasons, I came up using the expression a lot. But I noticed that at one point, I was with a group of people, and I used yo at the, I said, something's going on, yo. And they all went, what did you just say? And it was just like everybody was completely startled to hear me say this.
So you started it.
No, I didn't start it. I think it may have been because I had a conversation with my then 20-something-year-old son at that point. And that was why
I get it.
Because he uses that.
Right. So do you see that these things evolve in culture as time goes on once they get indoctrinated into the culture? Well, I guess what I want to know, and unless you have a direct address to the yo?
No, just that it's another punctuation, but specifically an exclamation point.
But let's talk about using language to garner support, like on a political mm-hmm. level. It seems that a lot of these taglines are used, and that there's something about pop language that uses it buttresses politicians from actually, you know, telling the truth. It also makes them look like they're being more genuine they are. It also it clips things down. It enables them to generalize, and they are very aware of this, are they not?
Yes, that they are. As are all ad makers.
Yeah.
I'm saying throughout this book that this is the language of advertising. A lot of these pop phrases are, in fact, mini ads themselves that we all use. Politicians more consciously than most of us, I'd say. But And while this language is fun and colorful, and as I said, the closer it is to its origins, it's vivid. It can be art and poetry,
yeah, sure.
You know. But once it gets processed through the media and through politicians and through advertising, my problem with it is that it can make us more likely to be convinced of an argument, not on its merits and not on whether something is true or not, but on whether something sounds like a punchline.
Right, like shock and awe, like WMDs, like the way these tag phrases are used,
right,
to the point where people have to do no investigation whatsoever. They can just refer to the button, and people will know exactly what they're talking about without any investigation.
It is a very modular way of talking and thinking.
Right.
And it is about pushing buttons and that sort of
way. Serves to keep people stupid on some level because they never have to engage in the actual thought or the investigation. They can just use the button.
And I'm also saying here that thoughts that don't fit into that particular phrase,
yeah,
or format,
yeah,
they're too fat to fit through that. So a lot of it gets shoved off to the side and never gets propagated, like the simple ones.
Right.
Well, yeah, and then remember too that the U.S. military has been doing this for years.
Yeah,
every operation they have is an operation something, whether,
yeah,
it's D-Day or Operation Desert Storm or Iraqi Freedom. They always put it into like 3-word slogans or symbols that are easy for people to digest. I would imagine.
Have you got any in your head that have failed? It seems that sometimes they appropriate these little buttons and they just kind of like. they don't really catch on. Like shock and awe failed because it didn't work and it became a joke. You also make some issue around that was a very interesting point you made about how the language of 9/11 entered pop culture in ways that were lighthearted almost.
Right.
Like ground zero, like a kid referring to his room as ground zero and that kind of stuff.
Right, right. Well, with 9/11, a lot of the words that came out of that, burqa, ground zero, shock and awe. At first, they were meant to impose a feeling of awe.
Yeah.
And they did have a brief honeymoon, but immediately they're ripe for ridicule and irony.
Yeah.
Regime change being,
yeah,
probably the most,
oh, yeah,
famous.
Taking the language that they used and put together in their little propaganda,
yes,
world and turning it on them.
And that's wonderful. That's a great way to do it.
We try to do it every day.
Yes, right. Yeah, and you have to do it. And a lot of this language has a built-in comedy about,
uh-huh,
it, and it's great, and we couldn't think without it.
Well, Leslie Sabin, thank you so much. The book is Slam Dunks and No-Brainers, Language in Your Life, the Media, Business, and Politics, and Life, Whatever. It's great talking to you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
In just,
thanks,
a few minutes, we're going to have Johnny K Street come in here. Maxine Waters is going to be here. Hang out. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Is it possible for you to shut the f*** up for 10 seconds?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It's 49, almost 50 past the hour, ladies and gentlemen. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. All right, so let's do this. There are a lot of big stories in the news this week, so let's get some bets down with our own Inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny K Street. Johnny, where's the action, man?
It follows me, baby.
Oh, all right.
The big news this week is Dick Cheney, number 2, the mechanical man, the big dick. Cheney and Rover are about as welcome in the White House right now as Jeff Gannon on an out call. The rumor is Cheney and Bush aren't even speaking anymore, and you know what that means. No one is running the country. Cheney has about as much power right now as an Iraqi family during a bombing raid. Libya's out, Rove is hiding under his bed,
yeah,
and Cheney is walking around the Rose Garden in a bathrobe talking to himself.
Yeah.
The White House is so screwed up right now, Halliburton is moving their Washington office out of the basement.
Oh, hey, Johnny, do you think Bush's inner circle is going to take more hits?
I'll give you 8 to 5 on it.
Put me down for 500.
I'll take that for a grand, man.
This whole black site torture thing is going to blow up like the Baghdad Crosstown Express.
Oh.
There's one thing the American people hate more than the Bush administration torturing prisoners. It's torturing prisoners and not telling them about
it. That's right.
But it's getting harder and harder for Bush to keep things secret. The White House has more rats right now than a Chinatown restaurant. No one can keep their mouth shut over there. The best part about the torture story is Bush said on camera, we do not torture.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What about those pictures we all saw? Naked pyramids, a broad leading a guy on a leash. What was that, a party at the Playboy Mansion?
Hey, Johnny, how do you think Bush is going to deal with the new torture allegation?
He's already dealing with it. He left town. But at this point, Bush is about as welcome in other countries as an avian flu epidemic.
All right. So, Johnny, what's the action on Bush and Cheney patching things up and doing some damage control?
Let's put it this way.
Yeah.
There's a better chance of Ike and Tina Turner patching things up. You know, for years now, Cheney and Bush have gone together like a hot dog and a guy with no brains. But those days are over. First of all, everyone knows Cheney was behind the whole Valerie plane Traitorgate fiasco. Iraq is a mess thanks to Cheney's advice. The country is going to hell in a handbasket. And all he can concentrate on is attaching electrodes to some guy's sack in Romania in the interest of national security. This guy doesn't need a new heart. He needs a new brain. Odds of Bush and Cheney patching things up in the near future, 100-1.
Johnny, I'll take a C-note.
All right, put me down for 102, Johnny.
Bush's polls are the lowest of his presidency. Any action on whether they're going up or down?
Bush's poll numbers are lower than Tucker Carlson's ratings. That show has a longevity of one of Saddam Hussein's defense lawyers. And Hussein is going through lawyers the way Michael Jackson did. Three or four have been whacked already. The only advice I get a chance to give him is stop, drop, and roll. Right now he's being represented by the law firm of Duck and Cover. But I digress. As far as Bush's poll numbers goes, he's slightly ahead of Danny Bonaducci and slightly behind Bin Laden. His approval rating is 35%. I'll give you even money. It'll drop to 25 by February.
Oh, my God.
Wow. I'll take that for $500.
Yeah, put me down for $1,000 on that, buddy.
Beautiful. Here's the problem with Bush, once and for all.
All right.
People just don't trust Bush anymore. Let's face it. Up until now, lots of people looked at Bush as the idiot uncle they may or may not have. You know, somebody who lived in a little apartment with a collection of bottle caps and worked in a shipping department somewhere. Not a pedophile, not a rocket scientist, basically just a moron.
Yeah.
Now people have finally realized how evil this guy is. If Bush wants to turn those numbers around, he needs to do something drastic. He's got to get the CIA to grab a kid and throw her into the crocodile pit at the Bronx Zoo, then jump in and save him. He's got to donate a kidney to a veteran, kiss a crack baby, something. But it's not going to happen. Finally, people are waking up, and Bush is going down, baby. I'm out of here. I got to get to court.
All right, Johnny. Good to see you. That's absolutely right. Johnny is absolutely right. I was talking to Brendan before the show about that. It's like, what the hell is this guy going to do? I mean, certainly I don't want him to garner any approval ratings. I don't want his approval ratings to come up. But how is he going to save himself on any level, either politically or otherwise? He's going to have to do something like Johnny said. He's going to have to cure cancer.
Yeah. He's going to have to reach for something. Oh, God. You think he'll start another war?
That's what I'm afraid of, Riley, or at least. I mean, I know if they have the vaccine for bird flu, they got the bug, too.
Yeah, they probably do.
I don't know. It scares me.
Come on, stop scaring me like that, man. Will you?
It scares me when people like him are in a desperate situation. It scares me when these guys are in a desperate situation. As happy as I am about it, and as much as I want the Democrats to get a foothold and get some leverage and put a program together, these are the kind of guys. That's a horrendous thing to live in a country where you got to be afraid of the leader when they're in a desperate situation of how they're going to hurt the people of that country.
But you know what? We're seeing little by little, the Congress reacting to the results of the election the other day, and they're backing off of stuff. The House pulled out that Anwar drilling thing. Mm-hmm. At the last possible minute, because they knew they couldn't get it done. They've pulled back on food stamp cuts. They've pulled back on a number of issues and a number of initiatives that were the bedrock of their agenda.
So you're saying to me, Riley, as you usually do with the wisdom and sense that you bring, that, you know, on some level, because of the nature of politics and the way this system is structured, these guys start to worry about their own butts.
That's right.
They start doing the right thing out of fear that they will not be able to move forward.
That's right. Not move forward. It's get reelected.
Exactly.
That's what they're afraid of. They're afraid that they will lose the next election because people are going to tie them to the idiot king of the White House.
Isn't that interesting that, you know, in my idealistic sense and also in my naivete, you think that some politicians are actually working on behalf of the people, but usually they're working on behalf of themselves. And if that starts to match up with what the people need because they're afraid of losing
those people,
exactly.
Yeah, so but it doesn't have to.
Right.
That's the point. It doesn't have to. These folks, and, you know, some of them are, you know, come into the Congress as idealists, or some people really think they're going to make change. But what inevitably happens is, because they need so much money to get reelected, they go out there and start, should I say it? Bending over so they can get the dough.
Not this guy, though. In his victory speech, Mike Bloomberg said he was going right back to work for the city of New York, and he said he will not seek any more political offices after this term as governor. He said he would be...
Mayor.
I'm sorry. Mayor. Did I say governor? He said he will be committing the rest of his life to philanthropy. And you know what, dude? I actually believe that he will. I think that running the city was like a dream. It was like, you know, billionaires are like, I want to go to the moon. I want to have a balloon. His was to run New York. And I really believe that when he says he's out, he's out.
Oh, no. Make no mistake about it. Mike Bloomberg, if he says he's not running for anything, he will not be running for anything. And if anybody gives him any trouble, he will simply buy whatever it is that they have.
Yeah.
That's unfortunately or fortunately, how you look at it, that's the way he does politics, and he does it very well.
No, we don't have time to take this quick call. Well, you know, a lot of people like Mike Bloomberg, and we just found out that our producer, Brendan P.W. McDonald, confessed to voting for
traitor.
Him. Traitor. And Kayla voted for him as well.
Oh, wait a minute. Like, we got a bunch of Republicans in the booth.
Well, Brendan has insisted that he's a Democrat over and over again.
I think
Bloomberg is a Democrat.
What's that?
Insisted that Bloomberg is a Democrat.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. All right, so it's 57 past. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Maxine Waters. We've also got Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week, and film director Jim Sheridan will be with us. Stay with us. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Good morning. It's 6 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
How's it going, man? I went to hit the button for the bongo. Nothing. Now I got some weird car door thing. See that? Did you just hear a door close?
I did.
Unbelievable. How you doing? It's Thursday. Yeah. Go ahead and fix it, Kayla. Why don't you help me out here? Why don't you go ahead and fix the machine? That's great. Nothing like being mocked by technology. What's it going to do?
It works now, doesn't it?
Thanks for hitting me, too. That hurt. Comes in and beats me up like that. Oh, my God. So I hope you're having a good Thursday morning out there. Now what happened? Did you see that light fluctuate like that? Folks, I don't know what's going on in the studio. Whenever something like that happens, because I get that sometimes. Do you ever get that at the periphery of your vision, this weird fluctuate? Oh, so you get that too?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, okay, good.
I thought it was my glasses.
I thought I had a tumor, but if you get it too, then either we both have brain cancer or it's just a natural thing.
Yeah.
Let's move into something more interesting and important, like the news, with our guest joining us on the phone, as she usually does every week from Washington, D.C., is a Democratic congresswoman from California's 35th District. Maxine Waters, good morning, Congresswoman.
Good morning, Mark. And Mark, how are you doing?
All right, good morning.
We're great. You know, I tell you, I'm very excited about what happened with all those ballot initiatives in California being voted down.
Yes, absolutely. I am so excited and so pleased. Our delegation is, Democratic delegation was jumping up and down yesterday.
Oh, good.
We were able to defeat the governor on all of his proposals.
Yeah, it was beautiful. And I need you to explain something to me, because Mark Riley explained it a little bit to me, because I was reading those things, and I was reading the union one where the union was supposed to, you could vote for the union to tell its members how they were going to be spending the members' money on political lobbying. And for some reason, when I read that, and not knowing, I thought that was a good thing, but it really isn't, is it?
No, it's not. What really happened was they said, okay, you pay union dues, and the way the union dues are used now, they're put into political action committees, some of the union dues, mm-hmm. just a portion of them, and they're saying they want a vote on every time that the union wants to spend some money on a local campaign or a national campaign, not like it's a collective effort. They were trying to break up the ability for the unions to be able to match the corporations.
Oh, I see.
In spending. They didn't have any limit on corporations. Corporations can spend as much money as they want to, but they tried to limit the amount that unions could spend by dividing their members up and having them vote every time they want to spend some money on an election.
Why do they have to be so confusing on the ballot? Why? Sometimes I read those things and I don't know which way they go.
Well, you know, it's that kind of language that they use to explain plane issues on the ballot, and just as you were confused, many Californians were confused. Mm. That's why it took so much time, effort, and money to explain to them so that they would know what the heck they were doing when they went into that ballot box.
Mm-hmm. Now, Congresswoman, was yesterday, Tuesday's vote in California, in your judgment, a referendum on Governor Schwarzenegger, or was it, as some people have projected, simply a problem with the way he went about trying to get these ballot measures passed?
No, it was definitely a referendum on the governor. You know, Governor Schwarzenegger came into the office with that kind of movie swagger, talking about kicking butt,
yeah,
and calling legislators girly men, mm-hmm, and on and on and on, and he got carried away, got big-headed, and decided that he wanted to take all of the power. He wanted to determine how the budget was operated and whether or not they have education as the number one priority. He promised he was going to have education as the number one priority, but once he got into office, he wanted to change the law that said, indeed, it should be a priority. And he decided that he wanted to chastise the unions. Absolutely, go after them. Go after the members of Congress by changing the way they draw the lines. And instead of the legislature drawing the lines, they would have three retired judges who they would pull out of mothballs and come to draw the lines. So he went ahead and put all of this on the ballot, a $50 million ballot initiatives, an election that was quite unnecessary, costing the taxpayer money that we didn't need to have to spend, and we beat him. We beat him on every one of them.
Right. Congresswoman, did you get a chance to see the American oil sheiks in front of the Senate Energy Committee yesterday?
No, I didn't get a chance to see them yesterday, but I'm pleased at least we're holding some hearings to talk about oil and what the captains of the industry are making, what they're earning, and how outrageous it is with the price of oil for the average American citizen. At least we have a discussion about it. Hopefully we can do something about it.
Now, Congresswoman, some say it's time for a tax on windfall profits coming out of the oil industry. Do you agree with that?
I do. Listen, I think that not only should we be concerned about the amount of money that the CEOs and the people at the top are making, but when they are making windfall profits, we have a huge deficit, and we're talking about, you know, spending all of this money, not talking about it, we are spending $1 billion a week on Iraq, $1 billion a month in Afghanistan. We're cutting back in this budget. We're cutting back on hot lunch programs. We're cutting back on food stamps. We're cutting back on support for the most vulnerable people in our society. Yeah, windfall profit tax would suit me fine.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Let's talk overall Democratic momentum here. Very exciting what happened in California, what happened in Virginia, what happened in New Jersey. It seems that all polls are indicating that the country is definitely tired of the stench coming out of this administration. Now, I want to know, how do you feel that there is a momentum building, and what do you think are going to be the front burner issues for the Democrats coming into the senatorial elections?
Absolutely. Well, Democrat Kane's win in Virginia, Corzine's win up in New Jersey, those were important wins.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think we have a momentum. And I do think the American public is tiring of this administration. They're being revealed for what they are, liars and full of deceit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they took us into war with lies. They tried to change Social Security. We stopped them on that, but the American public remembers what they tried to do, tried to privatize Social Security. So I think the issues are going to be dealing with how does America take care of its own? What about our domestic agenda? What are we going to do about senior citizens? What are we going to do by making sure that there's housing, mm-hmm, for the average American who's working every day? What do are we going to do about increasing minimum wage and having a working wage for people? You know, Americans were very shocked by what happened with Katrina. And then to say you don't have enough money to pay for it, you had all of those people without food, without water, Homeland Security, what are we really doing? We tricked the American people. We didn't, but the president did. He's tough on terrorism. He's going to have strong Homeland Security. And all of a sudden, you have a natural disaster, and you can't even take care of it. So I think these are some of the issues that are going to cause big wins for Democratic Party.
Now, Congresswoman, obviously people are talking next year about retaking the House and perhaps even the Senate, maybe even both. You never know. Are there districts in the House of Representatives or in your state specifically that you think Democrats are right to take?
I do. I think that Dreyer, who's, you know, top leader over on the other side, got to be very, very concerned that there's a possibility that his district can be won. I think Pombo out in California, up in the Stockton area, should be very, very concerned that he's vulnerable. I think that we can take some of those Republican seats, even though in the last reapportionment, these districts were cut very close, where it appears that they were made safer for Democrats and Republicans. I think because of the way this administration has misled the public, has divided the public, polarized the citizens of this country, that Americans are sick and tired of them, and it makes their members more vulnerable. And those are just two of the ones in California that I think had better beware.
All right. I believe you. Congresswoman Maxine Waters, it's great talking to you. Have a good day. We'll talk to you next
week. Thank you so very much.
Take care, Congresswoman.
Bye-bye. We got
to Dreyer.
Yeah.
She said Dreyer might be, wow, would that be, that would make my year.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
It would be.
All right, Matt, well, what do we got? Well, Bruce Cherry's going to come in here with, the newest big idea with his pitch of the week. Looking forward to that. And Jim Sheridan, who is he's got the, he was nominated for an Oscar. He's also got this new film out, the 50 Cent film, Get Rich or Die Trying. Hey, which one? He was nominated for Out of America. It was
My Left Foot, I believe.
My Left Foot. And what was the other one that I just said? In the Name of the Father, In America is the one that I saw last year. I thought that was a great movie. I really liked it. Very personal. I'm looking forward to talking to him. So stay tuned. It's 16 past. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Momentarily, we will be talking to Oscar-nominated director Jim Sheridan on the phone from Dublin to talk about Get Rich or Die Trying, the 50 Cent film, which he directed and was released yesterday. But right now, one of our writers, Bruce Cherry, has been trying to get a regular character on the show. He doesn't have that much longer to do it. His presentations have delighted staff and listeners alike. What can I say, people? Well, it says right here that I should say he serves a heapin' helpin' of funny with trenchant observation on the side.
I wrote that.
Yeah, it's very good. Now it's time for my favorite part of the week. Please welcome my dear friend Bruce Cherry for Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week.
That last part of the
week. Did I rush through it? I went too fast?
I think people got the gist.
You look great. You didn't shave, but you left you got the big sideburns like a creepy hippie.
That's right. Let's work in the visual element for the listeners at home.
You're a beautiful man, Bruce Cherry.
I think they could imagine me any way they wanted. You know, I could look like Colin Farrell.
I'm just amazed that a guy your age is actually staying svelte at 160 pounds and maintains those sideburns and all your hair, and it's trimmed nicely. A crew cut's a weird choice, but I like it.
A man my age? What's so weird about being 28?
Ooh, I take that.
Now, I can live in a fantasy world.
You look good for a roly-poly gnomish hippie guy. Go ahead.
Oh, man. My cover's blown.
What do you got?
Okay. Yeah. We've been on the wrong track. As you know, I'm pitching the thing. That's what you're mumbling
I'm
earlier.
Waiting.
We've been on the wrong track.
Mumbling.
Everything has been, it's just too much current events. I had the terrorist duck, the oversexed monkey. Mm-hmm. Intensely topical stuff, right?
Very popular, the oversexed monkey.
It was a funny sound.
Yeah, go ahead.
A monkey having sex. Okay, the listeners want to know you.
Yeah.
Mark, people can't resist.
Are you serious?
People cannot know. They can't resist the story of the coal miner's son who worked his way up from poverty in Appalachia. Okay, there may you have a problem with that?
No.
Maybe. Oh, okay. Because it's called myth building.
Okay.
If you got that.
Okay.
I'm going to create an everyman persona, like give you a background that let people relate to you in a kind of a... Two words, blue-collar comedy.
Okay, all right, all right, okay.
You may be tempted to say that's actually three words.
That's three words.
That would be the sort of over-intellectualizing that turns off the masses.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just didn't understand that. That one was in bold.
Yeah, I know. Okay. I typed it at midnight.
But I thought that was a heading, not a dialogue.
Okay.
All right, let's do this. Do we have a script for this thing that you have? Go ahead,
here we go. We're going to script right now.
Okay,
each week, you get visited by an old family friend, and that lets listeners have a little sort of a peek into your own background. An old family friend named Merle from your home in Pigeon Fork.
Where's that? Pigeon Fork.
It doesn't matter.
Okay, all right. Hey, here we go. We'll be right back with more. Whoa, who's entering the studio?
Well, I know you. You're that radio guy. Do you remember me?
Of course I do. You're Merle, a friend of my father's from my old hometown.
That's me. You remembered.
Yeah, Merle, you've been freeloading on my couch for the last 6 weeks.
This is eerie.
You owe me $400 for the phone bill.
Enough small talk. Mark, I was just thinking of something your father used to say.
Used to say? Merle, my father is still alive.
I know. He stopped saying this a while back. He used to say, you can take the boy out of the country, but if you dress him up like a little girl, you'll cause permanent psychological damage.
Hey. hey, enough about that.
I know. Your dad's awful sorry about that, but in that taffeta, you look just like a little princess.
All right. So I get it. You're building the myth that I was raised as a girl.
Yeah, I know people relate to childhood trauma, Mark. Having your parents dress you as a girl is one of the most common.
All right.
But...
Okay, all right.
You know, your daddy once told me something very profound.
Really? What was that, Merle?
I don't know. I didn't write it down or nothing. Point is, a man wasn't a complete idiot. Mark, I had a lot of respect for your father.
What is this, Green Acres? Mark, my father is not dead.
I know. I lost respect for him. But I shouldn't talk bad about the deceased.
Merle, my dad is not deceased.
I didn't say deceased. I said diseased.
Oh.
We were in the Korean War together, and that man spent a lot of time in brothels.
Wait. You can't make my father into some Korean War whoremonger.
Military is very big now, Mark. Just go with it.
And Mark, I gotta tell you, your daddy made a deal with the devil. He sold his eternal soul to Satan, and in return, he got a satellite dish.
A satellite dish?
I didn't say it was a good deal with the devil. Your daddy didn't know how to haggle. He could rule the world, but no, he wanted ESPN.
Uh-huh.
An odd choice, considering your father's well-known homosexual propensities.
This is absurd. My dad's not gay.
Mark, your daddy make Liberace look like Mickey Rourke. Can you deny that for years, your father had an unnaturally close relationship with his quote-unquote best friend, and that relationship was fraught with homoerotic overtones?
Now, Merle, you're my dad's best friend.
And thus in a unique position to judge.
All right, that's it. You made my father into a gay hillbilly who consorts with prostitutes and sold his soul to the devil and raised me as a girl.
Isn't it great? You're overcoming adversity.
Uh-huh.
People relate to you.
Uh-huh.
It's like suddenly you're human again. Wait, I think Riley has some feedback.
Mark, let me just say this. Totally on my own. I've worked with you for almost 2 years. This is the first time I feel I really know you. What a powerful biographical piece.
I don't know.
You don't want to open up.
What?
You don't want to open up to the people. I'm telling you, that's what's going to crack everything.
You know what's going through my head is my dad is going to be sitting in New Mexico trying to figure out, like, is he mean this? Is this real? Is he trying to slander me? I don't know. You know, I don't need this crap from my own kid. I'm going to call him and send him a weird email.
Nay, on the ad day.
I'm sorry, man.
You're not supposed to actually have a non-gay hillbilly father.
But, you know, he's going to go like, I don't know anyone named Merle. That's the email I'm going to get. Who the hell's Merle? And wait, no, I don't know if this is going to work because it's going to, my dad is...
Okay.
What?
I could retool it to include your mom.
All right, well, that might be good. That might be interesting. I think they want you to come back
work.
With that. Sure, you know. All right, you know, go back to the drawing board. We got a few more weeks, so let's make something happen for you. I think we're going to like the one right before, you know.
Right before what? What's
you know,
going on?
I'm sorry.
What's
get
going
out.
On?
Get out! We're
going
to be talking to Jim Sheridan momentarily, the Oscar Award-winning director about the new 50 Cent film. Yeah, did I just say 50 Cent film? Get Rich or Die Trying. 27 Past, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
All right, 34 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's my friend Mark Riley.
Hey.
The hell's going on in that other studio?
I don't know.
Is that Horatio Sands?
Are they getting ready to hang somebody in there or something?
I don't know what's going on. I don't know. Franken's not on TV anymore. They can't be lighting the place.
Oh, no.
Come on. Here we go. There go. You're supposed to be on the show next week. There goes that one.
Yep.
I don't want to. Maron making fun of me.
He doesn't here listen to you.
I know, he doesn't listen to anybody. I came in here yesterday, and I like the guy, and Franken's doing a show from in here again. You know, I guess we're not supposed to talk about it. But I literally stood at the door, I came in to say hi to him. I stood there for 15 minutes. The guy, he didn't even notice me. I'm standing right there. He didn't look up, he didn't notice me. And what's his board up guy's name?
Chris Rosen.
Oh, Chris Rosen.
Chris goes, you want me to get his attention? And I'm like, no. Let me just watch him for a little while. Here we go. Our next guest is the Irish filmmaker of the long-awaited 50 Cent movie, Get Rich or Die Trying, which released yesterday. Jim Sheridan joins us on the phone this morning from Dublin. Jim, thanks for coming on the show.
No problem.
Hey, Jim.
This is an interesting film for you. What brought you and 50 Cent together? What attracted you to the film?
Bono knew I liked rap, so he told Jimmy Iovine, the head of Interscope Records, and I met him at a party, and he said, do you want to do this 50 Cent film? And I
looked
at the life story and said, yeah.
So Bono just called you up and said, Jim, you got to hear that I'm going to set you up with 50 Cent.
More or less, yeah.
Right. So a lot of people have been asking. It's just, I guess there have been a couple of Irish rap bands. I guess you're getting that question a lot. Why would an Irish guy be attracted to rap? But I know there are a few Irish rap bands.
There's a few Irish rap bands. It's not that. It's just that, you know, the music seems to be new and coming out of the ghetto, and it seems to be telling the story that you don't see in American films, you know?
Yeah.
It's become so tame. American cinema, like, it's like,
you're telling me,
you know, it's everything's about, it's the McDonald's, the middle class,
you know? Yeah, it's just one big stale patty, there's no doubt about that. So let me ask you this, are some of the themes that we're familiar with from any of your other movies, father and son relationships, you know, overcoming obstacles, are they in this film?
Yeah,
as well,
it's like that. It's a bit like that, actually. He had no father, so he's searching for his father throughout the film. And, you know, there's music in it, and it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting movie. I think it'll do well.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jim, how tough was it to get 50 Cent to actually relive? This is based on his life. How tough was it to get him to relive those parts of his life where violence was done to him?
You know, you'd expect it to be difficult. It wasn't that difficult. He didn't complain about it. Some of the parts where he was on the operating theater, where he was unconscious when it happened, was more difficult because, like, he had to relive that for the first time. But overall, he's great fun, and he just keeps going and never complains.
Is he a good actor?
Yeah, he's a very good actor. You know, he's, for the first time, he's amazing. And I think he'll, you know, do some other movies. He's funny.
Yeah, now I hear you get him to cry, which is not something rappers do generally in public.
That's right. I got him to break a lot of the molds of what they do, you know.
How'd you get him to cry? Did you tell him that his record sale tanked?
Exactly. He was like, I said, what did you think of? He said, failure. I said, wow. Didn't think your mother dying or your father not there or... No, failure. So
failure. That is exactly what he thought of. That's interesting.
Yeah. Jim Sheridan, there was some controversy about some of the billboards for Get Rich or Die Trying. Yeah. Apparently there was one with 50 Cent with a microphone in one hand and a gun in the other. Yeah. What do you feel about people, I guess at a point, self-censoring in terms of having those billboards removed?
I think it's stupid. It's a bit like, you know, certain people know they get publicity by jumping on the 50 Cent bandwagon, so they do it. You know, like nearly every poster in America has a gun. If you went into the video store and you had a truck to take away all the movies with a gun, you'd need two trucks. You'd have to come back a few times.
I got to be honest with you, Jim. Most, almost every American has a gun.
But that's true. I mean, I said to the, you know, I understand the role of the, you know, people. I think it was kind of the Nation of Islam or something.
Uh-huh.
Like, I understand the complaints that black kids are getting killed, but, like, the larger problem is there are real guns, not cardboard ones on posters.
Oh, that's absolutely true. You can't, there's just hundreds of thousands of guns in this culture. So now, I imagine this film is going to be a big hit. I guess you're banking on that. Do you feel that coming?
I'm banking on it, but it's very hard for the studio to get it wide. There's still a kind of resistance to urban black films in America, you know. You just can't push it in certain areas.
Why?
Well, I have no clue. It mesmerized me, you know.
But why do they say that? What's their thinking? It seems to me that rap culture and this type of subject matter is the most popular thing we got going here.
I know, but we couldn't get, the studio were afraid to release in more than 1,600 cinemas, and there's usually a big release is 3,500.
Are they telling you they're afraid of violence at the theaters?
No, not so much that, I don't think. It's just hard for some of the cinema owners to play it, I think, you know?
God, they're keeping movies about black people down.
Don't ask me, but I was mystified as to why it was in so few cinemas.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, no matter, and I think the studio are doing their best, but it just seems hard to get out there, you know?
Mm. Yeah. Now, Jim Sheridan, there are going to be some people who will compare this film to Eminem's 8 Mile. Is that a fair comparison?
Yeah, well, just because the other one came out first and it's about a rapper, but they're very different types of guys, you know. Eminem is very much about the, you know, the lyrics and the, you know, clever rhymes and, you know, very smart and a unique type of, you know, kind of rapper. 50's more, you know, diss within the black culture and more into the diss rap. And then his hits are all like dance floor hits, you know?
Yeah.
Even though his image is gangster rapper, his hits are dance floor. So it's, I found the rap a difficult part of the movie to tell because I felt it being told before.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it tomorrow night. It opens here in theaters. And good luck with the film, Jim.
Where are you now? Where's this? Where are you coming from?
We are broadcasting from the moon. No, we're in New. Oh, we're in New York City. Oh, so it opened last night.
Yeah, it opened last night.
Okay.
Oh yeah, I was just wondering. Yeah, I know. I thought you were from New York.
Yeah. You're in New York now.
No, I was in New York for the Breeders' Cup, where I met your girl from the station, so...
Oh, Lucy Kerrigan. Isn't she a wonderful girl?
Yeah, very, very charming. That's why I said I'd do the program.
Well, there you go.
We appreciate you doing it, okay, Jim?
All right.
You take care. Thanks a lot, Jim. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Score one for Lucy.
I kind of felt like that last part should have been off air a little bit. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that was the conversation Brendan was supposed to have when we were done. Like, the only reason I do, I've never heard of you guys before, but your booker is a very charming person. Who can say no to Lucy? Yeah. It's hard to say no to Lucy.
Especially at the Breeders' Cup.
The funniest thing about Lucy is when you say something too dirty for her to deal with, and she gives you that look of like, I'm not even going to register that. It's not. I'm not even processing.
Lucy can play.
No, I know that. No, she's not prude in any way. Yeah. But you know, with Pashman around, and you know, you get to that point when people, you're like, what is the line?
Right. Well, we had the Aristocrats moment, which brought her over the edge a little bit.
Yeah, right. She just wouldn't have it. She just would not have it.
That was a line in the sand that was drawn, yeah, and she was not going to cross.
And we can't even talk about it on the air with any real openness because it's disgusting and hilarious and wrong.
Now, did you tell Lucy that joke that you...
Yes.
And what was her reaction?
What joke?
The joke that I told...
Oh, the one you told Roddy Doyle.
Joke I told Roddy Doyle, which in retrospect, it's driving me a little crazy. Because
for the benefit of those who don't know what we're talking about, Roddy Doyle, the author of The Commitments, was on the program 2 days ago, right?
And I'm talking to him the whole time, and I'm thinking about... He's talking about Louis Armstrong, and he's talking about his new book, and I keep thinking about, you know, Irish spirit and the myth of the Irish in America. And I told him, I was going to tell him the joke on air. Thank God I didn't. He laughed, but now I don't know if it's a polite laugh.
Why?
Because it's funny. It's a funny joke. And
what did Lucy say about it?
Lucy said that it made Irish people look stupid.
Oh.
But she laughed.
Oh, good.
She said she laughed in the shower. That's not an easy laugh to get, the laugh in the shower.
Yeah.
To be listening to the radio and get the laugh in the shower? It is a funny joke, and I got to tell you honestly, in my heart, it had nothing to do with Irish people being stupid. It had everything to do with them being, you know, hard headed and tough, but not stupid. You understand? Hard headed's not stupid. It's not. Do you want? Should I tell the joke again?
I guess you have to now.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Tell the hard-headed, stupid joke.
You know what? I'm going to save it. It's 44 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
This is Wayne Gilman, better known to the hard body mamas of the greater New York metropolitan area as Newsday. When I'm not busting a cap in some jive cat's ass for hogging the printer when I'm on deadline, I'm having a funky good time with Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Ooh, Newsday!
But look who's awake. Ready for another taste of Wayne?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Nine past the hour. Let's land this thing. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. I'm poking through the emails here. What the hell is this? How old is the girl Lucy? I listen to Air America for comfort, not to be hearing, quote, old boys, unquote. Old boys. What does that mean? Who's, I don't know how old Lucy is.
She's like 30.
No, you get old. Oh, that good. That good for you. You'll have to, you're going to have to deal with the Celtic wrath.
Yeah. Absolutely.
She's like 30. You don't ask women how old they are.
Lucy.
I know, but you know,
we're not perverted old men talking.
I think it was something about the use of the word girl, perhaps. I you know, it's weird you get these crazy emails.
But he said Jim Sheridan said girl, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, so it's his fault.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Blame the Irish guy.
The Irish guy over there in Dublin with his movies. It's his fault.
Yeah.
All right, so here's the joke that I
yeah, we phoned Jim Sheridan in the break and told him the joke, too.
He didn't think it was very funny. But what? Now, what I want to know is we got a guy wandering around the studio, okay? He looks to me. He looks
so
like,
we're dealing with all of Marin's racial sensitivities. Yeah, right,
well, but no, I thought it was a ratio sans.
Ladies and gentlemen, and our race segment here on Morning Sedition.
Why would ratio sans be doing?
Be installing upholstery in the studio.
Does he have nothing better to do?
And no, you kept saying it.
Well, what would like, it be?
But first of all, you're like, that's that guy from Mad TV yelling
I know,
at
but,
the man.
I know, but I didn't. But you guys are insinuating that it's racial in some way. I didn't know that Horatio Sanz was Mexican. And if you were saying
Horatio,
but wait, Horatio Sanz, what is it? Doesn't sound Mexican to
well,
me.
According to Dave Goliath, anyone's name ending in an O is Latin.
What is that theory, Dave?
Of in a vowel.
I don't know. It just seems all true. I mean, they're Italian peoples, but
they're Italian people's butt. Horatio.
I don't know.
Antonio.
Well, my last name's Lopresto.
So you're just
a
Mexican.
Then.
A Latino, I should say. I don't want to be specific. It could be South American. Could be Guatemalan. We should interview the guy.
Probably Guatemalan.
We interview the guy. He's like, I feel bad now.
Horatio Sanz's probably not Mexican. He's probably some other Latin type of guy.
Latin type of guy.
Okay.
You think? Is he America real?
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's the last days of this show, I'll tell you that. But here we go. No, here's the joke I told Roddy Doyle, which I thought was completely reasonable, because I liked it. I wouldn't have told. I'm not an inappropriate guy. I'm sensitive.
Not at all.
No, but I'm sensitive. I'm certainly not inappropriate that way.
Wait, let's clear this up. Marin is overly sensitive, especially to this kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's true. Sure. Yeah, I was made that way at the very big early days of this network. Here we go. What we're doing here is the joke. Here's the joke. These two Irish guys immigrate to America. It's during the Wild West time. I don't know what time that would be. In the early 1800s, okay? And they go into a bar, and they can't find work, and they're in the bar, and the bartender says, you got to go out west, where they're given $1 a scalp if you scalp Indians. So these guys are like, great. They get on a coach, and they go out west, and they get some horses, and they go out into the Wild West, and all of a sudden they find themselves surrounded by Indians up on a ridge, literally thousands of Indians. And one Irish guy says to the other, we're going to be rich.
You know
what? What?
You know what I like, though? I like that it's offensive to Irish people and not Indians. Like, yeah. It's a joke about scalping Indians.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the Irish people that you're worried about offending.
Oh, God. Dude,
what color is the sky in his world?
This is a historical joke.
Now we're going to parse it.
Historical context.
As the only Irish person on mic right now, I have to say I'm a bit offended by it, but like all good Irish people, I'll just hold it in and go home and beat my wife.
Your new wife. It's already come to that. Oh, man. Yeah, but look, why don't you have a drink on top of that? Let's have a couple cocktails before you beat your wife. Good for you. In all honesty, I meant no offense by it. You know, I really didn't, and I hope he didn't take it that way. He laughed, and then he walked out and shook your hand and gave me that look that, you know, Irish people give you. You know?
Uh-oh.
That one where they just burn through you with their black eyes.
Yeah, we call that the gypsy stink eye.
You're punchy, man.
The past 2 days we've made fun of gypsies, Mexicans, eating babies. Yeah. We're on a roll.
Oh, my God. That was hilarious. I got a guy coming doing some cover art for my new CD that's going to come out in 2 years. You know, the one I made a year ago? But he heard the Jim Earl piece.
You mean?
Todd Brad.
Yeah, and
analyst.
Yeah, that's the one.
Right. So we got some emails about that, you know. And this guy Tubbs, who's doing my cover art, says, "Yeah, it was really disturbing. I was really upset with it until he eats the baby at the end. Because before he ate him, I didn't know if it was funny or not." He said that. And I'm like, well, thank God we had him eat the baby to let you off the hook, you know. Well, you know, Jim is, he's at the edge of his sanity, and that's what's coming out. We're looking forward to some more deeply dark pieces of comedy from Jim. So, Riley, do we have anything, do we want to leave this in any way? Do we have any little things that we want to get covered here before we go away?
Let's see.
Okay,
We let people know, of course, about what happened over in Jordan. A tragedy, 57 people.
Yes, we did.
We also let folks know about that low-life skunk, Jag Abramoff, who was trying to sucker a West African president of a country out of 9 mil.
I'm looking forward to those indictments coming down. I'm looking forward to that investigation being done, because alongside the possibility that Patrick Fitzgerald is still, you know, investigating Rove, and that could still come down that Rove is indicted, there are rumors that the White House is preparing for a post-Rove White House, that thing is still under investigation. And the idea that Jack Abramoff, who was this corrupt, horrendous, slick lobbyist, could be connected to who knows how many people in Congress. They might be Democrats as well, but mostly Republicans, that the reign of indictments could get even larger in two separate investigations, not to mention Bill Frist, who is certainly still under Security Exchange Commission investigations, and we haven't even heard about that yet. And Tom DeLay is not off the hook. He's busy trying to...
Off the hook?
He's trying to buy another judge.
Yeah, well, you know, he could end up... See, DeLay is among the indicted.
Yes.
Abramoff, among the indicted. Frist, not yet indicted. Libby, indicted. Mm-hmm. Cheney, not yet indicted.
Oh, boy.
Rove, not yet indicted.
If that goes to trial, man, if this Libby thing goes to trial, what a circus that's going to be. It's going to be so thrilling and exciting watching Dick Cheney trying to jump through hoops. I can't wait.
You know, I'm wondering if Dick Cheney might not try to leave the country rather than testify at something like this.
Just on business, he can leave. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for Morning Sedition's Cliff Notes. After winning a second term by a record margin, New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg said he will never run for elected office again. The billionaire mayor said he plans to use his fortune to build a high-tech cave and a custom car, create a cool uniform, and fight crime under the name Rich Guy. The mayor added, criminals and evildoers, be forewarned. You have 4 years to clear out of New York City, then it's on. After leaving politics, Bloomberg plans to spend half his fortune on a one-bedroom apartment in Chelsea. Get a Metro card and just chill out. Heads of five major oil companies were drilled at Senate hearings where they tried to defend their record profits as consumers pay record prices. Democrats had wanted the executive to testify under oath, but Republicans rejected the idea for safety reasons, saying if these guys put their hand on the Bible, this place could go up like a Roman candle. There was an uncomfortable moment when the oil company executives, not understanding what the meeting with the senators was for, began bidding to buy them. Phrase of the day, just drop it in the conversation. Sure, the Libby indictment is important to the nation. You know what else is important to the nation? Nation, the Cheney indictment, the Rove indictment, the Rice and Rumsfeld indictment, yeah. and the Bush impeachment. Wake up, sheeple. Libya's just a joker now. It's time to tear down the whole house of cards.
There you go. Man, it's been great today. Tomorrow we've got Ann Rice, we've got Lawton Smalls, Carter Milfington, all on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.